For me, female empowerment is about taking away women's fear of choosing this path, just being courageous for once, and simply taking that step forward. I don't think that as women, we need to become like men, but I do believe that sometimes we need to appear just as bold and simply go our own way. And that is what female empowerment means to me, encouraging women to take this path and to achieve it, of course, always in their own way. I believe that overall, a good mix creates a completely different team dynamic and also brings about a completely different atmosphere within the team. When I left ESA, the European Union Aviation Safety Agency, I had been the only woman on the team. And afterwards, the guys told me that the way they interacted with each other completely changed. So when I was there, things were somehow a bit more harmonious and people were almost friendlier to each other.
Welcome to Cybersecurity Shall Be C-Level Priority, the podcast that puts the digital world to the test. Cyber attacks are on the rise, and data is the most valuable asset in today's world. But how can we protect what matters most to us? Drawing on the latest insights, effective strategies, and practical tools, we'll show you how to create a more secure digital environment. Because one thing is clear, security isn't negotiable, it's a top priority.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of Cybersecurity Chefsache, the podcast. Today with Julia. Hi, Julia.
Hi, Nico. I'm glad it worked out today.
Yeah, we had a bit of a tricky time scheduling, especially with the baby and everything going on. But that's why I'm even happier that it finally worked out now. For everyone who doesn't know you yet, why don't you tell us a few things about yourself?
Yes, I'd be happy to. So I'm Julia. I'm currently working from home near Munich. I've been working in cybersecurity and IT security for over 20 years. I started out at Telecom, then worked at the European Aviation Safety Agency, and after that spent over 8 years here in Munich. Now I'm the CISO at Infodis, a small to medium-sized company that is, however, part of the Airbus Group. The industry itself has developed quite a lot, shifting from a very security-driven, broad economic perspective towards the public sector, or rather the defense industry. So it's a very interesting path for me at the moment.
Today, we have another exciting topic that hasn't been on the podcast for a long time, namely the topic of female empowerment. And for everyone who doesn't really know what female empowerment is, least in your opinion, what does female empowerment mean to you?
It's always a tricky question to define, and it kind of depends on who you're discussing it with. For me, female empowerment simply means paving the way for other women to pursue a similar career path to mine, for example. Many women say, oh, I can't do that, and I'm not brave enough to try. And you know the stereotype. When a job is posted, I get 20 male applicants who have just read the job title and already think it's awesome for them. And then there's a woman who says to me, well, maybe I could do it, but out of 9 requirements, I don't meet 8 of them, and the 9th only halfway. And for me, female empowerment is about taking away women's fear of choosing this path, just being brave for once and simply taking that step forward. I don't think we as women need to become like men, but I do think that sometimes we need to be just as bold and simply go our own way. And that, to me, is female empowerment, encouraging women to take this path and to achieve it, of course, always in their own way.
I also find that a super interesting point you just made, because for me, I talk about this topic a lot. And I was also recently at the Cybersecurity Summit in Hamburg. And we'll be talking about your second area of expertise in a moment. You've just told us again what you do professionally, but you also have a topic that's really close to your heart. And there was also a group from you present at the event where we took a big photo together, which really showed how many women actually work in these professions and are involved in these topics. And that's why I'm always especially happy that by now it's the same with the podcast, that we have a 50-50 situation. So we have 50% women as guests and 50% men as guests. And I have to say, I would never have expected that a year and a half ago. I kept trying. And as you already mentioned, coming from this position of having to explain things, or to some extent feeling like, okay, I'm a woman and now I have to justify myself in a special way. I always noticed that back then. So when I reached out to women, the response was always something like, well, I don't know. I don't really feel that confident. Is this really the right thing for me? And so on. And then there was always this argument they would actually explain why they were a woman instead of explaining themselves through their achievements to say, hey, I do pen testing and that's just what I do. And it really doesn't matter whether I'm a woman or a man. I just do pen tests, right? And that's why I think it's so important that there are institutions that also support this topic. But before we talk about that, maybe a personal question for you. When did you realize, once you entered cybersecurity, that it's actually more of a male-dominated field in cybersecurity?
Well, I already noticed during my training that the entire technical field is more of a male domain. I did an apprenticeship as an IT systems electronics technician at Deutsche Telekom back then. And for all 3 years of training, I was the only woman. So it started already back then. Afterwards, when I was hired by Telekom, I was also the only woman in the team for years, except for the assistant, which somehow is always the classic case. It really only changed me not being the only woman on the team when I switched companies in 2015. Even at that company, I was always the only woman in the security department. We had then still have women in the development department there, but in these really technical areas, which at the time also involved a lot of hands-on operational work from me, I was always the only woman on the team. You just mentioned the initiative. So yes, I am very active in that area. As of today or currently, we have from ISACA, from the German ISACA chapter, the ISACA initiative. Just briefly about that, I have been very active with ISACA in Germany for a few years now. I am on the board as president for marketing and communications. And among other things, I take care of topics like the scholarship that we award once a year. And I'm also pleased that we've already had two women receive the scholarship. But my involvement actually goes back even further. So it's not always just about promoting women. I think it's fundamentally about supporting other people, those who need help, who might need a role model, or who might need support in the workplace or in a professional context. In 2002, when I was at Telekom in 2003, we started what was then called Queer Beat. Today, it's called Telekom Magenta. That's when we founded Deutsche Telekom's LGBT network. In the beginning, it was also a bit like a small regulars table. Today, it has developed into an official program at Telekom, which is completely public even at my CSD. It runs openly under the Telekom brand that then faded a bit for me also on the professional side. At Giesecke Devrient, we founded a women's network, although I always find the term women's network reminds me a bit of, don't get me wrong, but it's a bit like Alice Schwarzer, Flocati rugs, turtlenecks, and we sit around talking about how bad the world of men is. And I think that's completely changed it, at least from my perspective. We often have the discussion, should we include men or not? For me, that's not even a question. For me, it's totally self-explanatory. Yes, we have to include everyone. It just doesn't work. Otherwise, if we didn't, we'd just be isolating ourselves all over again. In our initiative, we now handle it so that fundamentally it's open to everyone. But we also plan and we call them safe space events or peer mentoring among women to hold sessions just for women, because there might be topics where some women simply feel more comfortable discussing them only with other women. But to really move the whole issue forward, I don't think it works without involving men.
You've already mentioned Alice Schwarzer as an example. What I'd be interested to know is, when you started out back then, did you have any role models or maybe a mentor who helped you along the way? Or was it already the case back then, as you mentioned, that there really wasn't a role model for you?
So for me, there simply wasn't a role model back then, but we did talk a bit beforehand about feedback culture. To be honest, I never really cared whether someone was bothered by the fact that I was a woman or not. Personally, I've never really had any problems with being attacked or criticized for being a woman in this job. Of course, there were sometimes situations where, for example, I would show up to meetings at GD with my boss and people would somehow address him instead of me. But he always reacted pretty coolly, let them finish and then asked them a bit pointedly, did you just ask me? Yes, why don't you ask the expert? And then they'd be sitting next to me, eyes wide. Oh, we thought she was your assistant. No, she's not. So situations like that happen quite often, but I can't say that I ever experienced real hostility the way some women describe it. What I would still say, though, is that fundamentally, for example, the salary structure is still different between men and women. You do notice it, even though in Germany it's forbidden or at least not encouraged to talk about it. The public sector is, of course, very nice in that regard, because there it's simply guaranteed that as a woman, I earn the same if I apply for a publicly advertised position.
Do you also see that back when you first started, there were hurdles for you as well? So did you ever have to consciously hold yourself back or step aside because as a woman, you encountered that kind of hurdle?
I don't know whether the reason was that I am a woman or that I didn't go to university. When I was at Telecom, there were salary bans. Those still exist quite often today, like career grade modest junior, regular consultant, senior consultant. And I was actually hired as a consultant, and then a new colleague joined the team who had just graduated from university. I was about 2 or 3 years out of my apprenticeship when I was told, yes, we've revised the salary bands, and from now on, you're back to being a junior consultant, because we only have a certain number of junior and consultant positions in the team. And the new colleague has a university degree, so he has to start as a consultant right away. And that wasn't my decision, but the company just set me back like that. Whether they set me back because I was a woman, since I was the only one in the team, is in hindsight, of course, very hard to say. It would probably be an accusation if I claimed that now, but I wouldn't want to rule it out. At the time, it was extremely frustrating for me, especially because then, of course, well, actually, let's strike the off courses. But because it then turned out that the colleague who came straight from university with only theoretical knowledge had practically no idea at all, and half a year later, he was coming to me for support, which led to some very funny situations, or sometimes rather awkward ones, because, of course, it really wasn't his fault, poor guy, but I have to admit that for me, he was a bit of a red flag. Back then, I was in my late 20s. I think today I would handle something like that a bit differently.
What's your take on the topic? We already talked about the fact that there's currently a large community and that there's more and more solidarity. I agree with you that it's important for us to exchange ideas with each other. So not just women with women, but also women with men, and likewise men with men. Everyone together. But what I always preach, and what I also find so fascinating, something I've noticed again and again recently, is that a woman can have a completely different perspective on security or handle security topics in a completely different way. Just to give a simple example, right? For example, if you've just become the victim of a cyber attack and everything is on fire, you know, and everything is going haywire, right? We always talk about the headless chicken mode too. I've just noticed more often that a woman tends to be more empathetic in those situations, you know? That might sound like I'm bashing men. Dear men, I really don't mean it in a bad way. I'm just reflecting on myself personally right now. I'd say that I'm actually pretty good at that too. At least that's the feedback I've gotten from my clients. But I do think that, especially in these kinds of situations, a woman can simply be more empathetic or even handle the situation better. Do you see it the same way, or do you think that's just that old way of putting people into boxes, or that old-fashioned way of thinking? Not putting people into boxes, that old-fashioned thinking is a woman is better at this or a man is better at that. Should we maybe not talk about this, or do you think it's okay to discuss it, especially when we're talking about security, that there might be roles or areas where a woman is simply better than a man?
I believe that overall a good mix creates a completely different team dynamic and also brings a whole new atmosphere to the team. When I left ESA, the European Union Aviation Safety Agency, where I had previously been the only woman on the team, the guys later told me that the way people interacted with each other changed completely after I left. So when I was there, things were somehow a bit more harmonious and people were, well, almost friendlier to each other. Men, when they're among themselves, sometimes have a very particular way of interacting. And I think that brings us to a very important topic. We are now talking about female empowerment in this context. But overall, to have a good team, to have a good perspective on cybersecurity topics, or even just in terms of how you interact, like having a calming influence in the team, for example, or being able to think from a different angle, I think it's not only important to have both women and men on the team, but also to have different age groups and a variety of experiences represented. And what I always find especially important, particularly in international companies, is that you don't have this kind of headquarters-centric in Germany that is headquarters-centric German white male culture with maybe two women included, but that you actually have truly international teams with different backgrounds, including from different cultures. In my last assignment at Giesecke Plus, the brand, I was in the technology office and worked in technology management and innovation. And especially when it comes to the topic of innovation, I can only achieve that through different viewpoints, through different perspectives. And sometimes those perspectives need to clash a little. And I think it's similar when it comes to information or cybersecurity. two, don't hire people who just do exactly what I say. I hire people because I want them to tell me, maybe we should do this differently. And have you considered this? I think there always needs to be a good shared culture, as you mentioned. I think women are good at softening the atmosphere a bit in teams, but it can also very quickly go in a different direction. If we take a look at the somewhat higher levels of hierarchy, when women move up, it's often the case that they actually reinforce this glass ceiling among themselves. So people often talk about queen bees. I've experienced all of that too. Not that I myself have been in a leadership role directly, but in my environment, I've seen women who have moved into department head positions and then suddenly do everything they can to get rid of other women around them because they see them as a threat, since there are already so few women and so few positions that are filled by women. And then from their perspective, it's like, I have to keep them away from me. They could become dangerous to me. And I find that really terrible. I think we should still support each other, of course, and also move forward together. And sometimes it might happen that someone overtakes me, but I just have to live with that. At least that's how I see it.
One positive trend I've noticed, maybe you can share your opinion on this as well, is that fewer women are leaving the STEM fields, or actually on the contrary, they're founding a lot of companies. Recently, I've seen a lot of women who have become self-employed, who have started their own businesses. Shout out, for example, to Rebecca, who has also recently become self-employed with a cool topic about AI, which is super exciting. Do you see this trend as well? That is that there is a movement that people, I would say, are gaining more self-confidence and saying, okay, maybe I don't fit into a certain box at a company, so I'll just start my own business and do my own thing.
Yes, I'm just thinking, on Tuesday, I was in Darmstadt at the Fraunhofer Institute for the Speed Up Secure Pitch Day. And unfortunately, there was only one woman there. She was there together with her husband and pitched with their small startup. But overall, I do think you see more women in STEM professions. Of course, you also see a lot more initiatives in that direction. And the question is always, where do you start if you want to motivate young women to go into STEM professions? In the past, we've often started by saying, let's go to universities, let's go to companies. And actually, that's much too late. So really, I have to start much earlier. You really have to start in school to get girls interested in ITER. Maybe not. You won't reach everyone after all. There will always be both. That's a pretty cool initiative, in my opinion. She calls herself a cyber mentor. It's exactly about being a woman who serves as a mentor for young girls. I'm talking about those between 8th and 13th grade over the course of a year, working on projects with them, sometimes helping with homework, maybe even going to their school and introducing yourself. Because if they're already sitting at university and have chosen economics, it's too late. I mean, not that we might not still need to do something at that stage, but by then it's basically already too late when it comes to choosing a career. Yeah, switching fields is an option. But even there, I was just talking to a friend about it recently, and she said, how do you do it? How do you stay involved? Like, how do you actually look at things when your colleagues or your employees present something to you? How do you make decisions? I said, well, I used to do it myself. So I have the huge advantage of having done hands-on IT work myself. That means when I talk to my colleagues about IT problems from a security perspective, I can really relate to their pain. Often, I think career changers have the problema rather the challenge that they receive a very theoretical education in information security or cybersecurity, try to apply the standards, but are missing a bit of that fundamental knowledge. How does it actually work in the background? And for me, it's been a huge advantage to know and to still know and keep experimenting with how the technology behind it all actually works. And I think that's why it's so important to take away that fear, especially for young girls.
Now, we've already talked a lot about empowerment. What I'd be interested to know is empowerment in practice. What can companies actually do to support women? Or rather, does the women's quota even still exist? Well, to be completely open and honest, I haven't really looked into that closely because personally, it just doesn't fit into my worldview. But maybe your opinion as well. Do you think that many companies still see women more as a quota rather than truly as an added value? And what could companies do to move away from this image?
I think that many companies initially see women as a quota or view such initiatives at first as, oh, that's a nice initiative from a few female employees. And at Giesecke Devrient, we founded the HiHair initiative with a few women from our talent program, precisely with this goal in mind. And at first, we started out in a small circle, but then we immediately sought out the right sponsors within the company. And I think the support was basically there from the very beginning. But it took a little while for management and the company to take a look at it, I think. So my impression was, how is this going? How is it being received? And I think with a lot of communication and by really explaining to the company that we are also generating added value for the business, because suddenly we are making the company more attractive to the outside world, the support kept growing. I haven't been there for a year now. I still follow the initiative. I'm still connected with my female and male colleagues. And by now it's reached a point where events are even being posted directly on the company's page. That wasn't possible in the beginning. And I think that's something companies need to do. I think that as an initiative, when you start something like this within a company, you really have to make it clear that you're not just a coffee club meeting during work hours, but that you're specifically considering what actions can we take and how can we create added value for the company through that. Because I think you shouldn't kid yourself about that either. So I'll only get support from the company if I also generate added value for the company. In other words, the company ultimately has to benefit from it as well. What can you do? The Collier, well, we had started it. The female colleagues have now implemented it, setting up an internal mentoring program. There are regular events, and we do something similar in our Shirdi Saka initiative as well. We have various ambassadors in different cities here in Germany across the country who initially focused primarily on in-person networking. So we started before COVID, but then it kind of died down during the pandemic because no one really felt like doing it virtually, and there wasn't any real exchange happening that way either. And we realized for ourselves that in-person meetings in a small group of about 20 to 30 people with a professional presentation work best. So where there's really a bit of networking, a technical talk given by a woman with women as the main target group, but men are also present, some discussion, and then afterwards networking together. And that's when the conversations really start to happen. And I find it really wonderful to see how these connections actually form and how things continue to develop. In my opinion, this is also something where women can learn a lot from men at working, exchanging ideas and that attitude of, oh, I need something, I'll just give him a quick call. In my experience, many women aren't able to do that. And I think it's super important to network and to stay in touch with people. After all, even today, and let's not kid ourselves, especially in Germany, jobs are still given out this way. I also prefer to hire someone I know rather than someone who sends me a resume with 25 certificates, but I have no idea how this person is on a social or personal level. From my point of view, that's actually much, much more important when I'm hiring someone, because skills can be learned. Personal and social competencies are much harder to learn.
I think there's another important point here, which I also mentioned at the beginning. As you already said, it has to provide real added value for someone. I often see topics like this that are perceived more as a show. You know, we do some kind of campaign, some kind of show, and then we start beating the big advertising drum again. And I always ask myself the question, which of course is easy for me to ask as a man, why do we always focus on the topic of women, right? Why don't we just, let's say, organize an event, for example, about a technical subject? And in this technical subject, the whole topic is discussed and there are women involved, but there are also men involved. In your opinion, why do we so often fall into this pattern of first having to explain why we do things as women or why it's so important to do them as women instead of focusing on the technical aspects?
Yes, absolutely. I completely agree with you. I really wish that one day we won't need any of this anymore, you know, that we won't need any more initiatives for women, that we won't need any more initiatives to actually implement and live out any of these DEI factors. If we take a look around the world, I think it's especially important right now that we continue with this in Europe. If you look at our neighbors in the US, for example, and also at European companies operating there, you can see that they are currently pushing back against this. And I think the biggest obstacle, the reason why things are still the way they are today, is that women simply think a bit differently. I often hear people say there are no female CISOs, but there are. I personally know at least five or six myself.
I actually know quite a few as well. And for those who are interested, you can just check out the LinkedIn channel of the Cybersecurity Summit. This isn't an advertisement, but the photo I mentioned earlier was posted there. There are, I think, 40 or 50 women in that picture. And I would say more than half of them are CISOs or in a leadership role.
Yes. So I think an important point is that women, for example, if you say there's a CISO summit, a woman might say, I don't have the title of CISO, because the title CISO isn't always officially given out, which is completely fair. But you could also be, I don't know, head of cybersecurity, head of information security, or simply information security officer as a staff function in a small company. I think that's already a big difference. So just as a bit of a footnote on stereotypes, I think we both know there are other examples, but men look at it and say, great, I'm going to that. I do security. I really don't care whether I have the CISO title or not. And women look at it much more closely. In addition, I think men are generally much more extroverted and tend to be much more present at conferences, let's say, than women in general. I know many women who say, no, I have to do my job well. I don't have any time for that at all. That's another thing, especially with the wide range of events we're seeing at the moment. It means that the women who do attend are spread out even more. And then you have this chicken and egg problem. A lot of women say to me, when I offer them a speaking opportunity, well, then I'll be standing there in front of 100 men and they all know better than I do. And I always say, well, I'm not so sure that they all actually know better than you, but at the very least, they act like they do. And at some point, you just have to get started. And I think it's really important to me that overall we get more women at conferences, events, or generally on platforms that provide visibility so that it becomes normal, so that it simply isn't anything special anymore for you as a woman to have a speaking engagement somewhere. I still see conferences where there isn't a single woman in the entire lineup. And I would also like to see some men speak up and say, guys, this isn't okay, you know, right? So I know a few colleagues who say that if there are no women at a conference, they won't go and they also won't accept any speaking engagements there. It's a shame that it has to be this way, but I think it's good that they do it.
I'm actually exactly that person who always brings it up at events and says, hey, do you also have women? I can get you some contacts, especially now through the podcast work. I have access to that. And I would just find it nicer because even just in terms of the atmosphere, it's really nice to have some diversity, right? Especially with topics like, as a classic example, the cybersecurity summit, what Annika brought to the stage there together with Caroline, that was brilliant. I mean, that was really something you've never seen before. That means there's really a lot of potential there also for the audience to actually take something away and witness something new. And that's why I think it's a win-win situation for everyone involved. I'm with you on that. But I also think, and I mentioned this at the beginning regarding the podcast, that there are a lot of people who just don't dare to do it. They could do it, but they just don't dare because they stay in their role. Well, I'm a woman. No, that's not really for me. And I always find it a shame that there are actually some women who let themselves be pushed into this role, even though they really didn't have to.
But I think it's also easier for the organizers that way, isn't it? From the organizer's perspective, when you do a call for PaperSend, we see this ourselves. We organize our IT GSC Congress for the ISACA Germany chapter. And I think we're actually doing pretty well with women as speakers, though usually not so much in the technical cybersecurity topics, but more in areas like audit and risk management. But overall, we see that most of the submissions, I'd say about 80% come from men. And if you have a more technical congress or more technical event, I think men are just much more willing to submit a talk, like I mentioned earlier, just putting themselves out there and also spending more time at these kinds of conferences. Organizers need to actively approach women. We keep offering ourselves as a resource. As the ISACA Germany chapter, we have over 4,000 members in Germany. In our She at ISACA network, we also have a number of female members. We have a partnership agreement with Women for Cyber here in Germany. We work very closely with the other ISACA chapters from the DACH region, with ISACA International and with ISAC 2. You know, that means through our network, getting female speakers is not a problem, but we do have to actively reach out to them. And I think that's a hurdle for many organizers because, of course, it makes event management more difficult. It's easier when you receive presentations from men through a call for papers, which may have already been given 10 times at other conferences, than to really take an active approach and think about how to put together such a program. People always tend to underestimate how much work it really is to organize events.
Absolutely. I mean, honestly, especially when it comes to calls for papers or finding speakers, I'm always happy to help out with that. But the thing is, none of us really have time. That's the issue. So of course, that's also the problem. I agree with you when you say, okay, you're going to focus on one topic, then it's naturally more difficult than just saying, okay, I'll take the time and look through a broader pool. That certainly makes it more difficult. But if we look at the topic again, because I'd also be interested in your personal perspective, do you also think that the societal issue, the image of women in the industry, for example, the simple stereotype that a hacker equals a man also contributes to the fact that from the outside, it's not really seen that we already have many women working in cybersecurity or more generally in STEM professions?
I think that's starting to change a little right now. But basically, that image still exists if you look, for example, at any pictures or stock photos. Most of the time, when it comes to technical professions or technical topics, you'll find men. Overall, though, my personal impression is that this image is starting to shift a bit, especially with the younger generations. So I get the impression that, especially among those under 30, this idea of, you know, I'm a woman, I can't do that, doesn't really count anymore. I think they handle it very differently than we used to. At our age, in our mid-40s, we're almost considered old-timers now. I think that's a good thing and that they need to keep going. What I personally really don't like, absolutely don't like, is the development in the rest of the world. The geopolitical situation isn't exactly promising either, but especially the developments regarding DEI topics globally. I'm part of the Global SHE at ISACA, Advisory Council at ISACA. That's a working group from the DAC Association that deals with DEI on an international level. We are women from different continents. I'm representing Europe in the group together with another colleague who represents the UK. Unfortunately, they've now left the EU. That's why she is still represented there separately. And when you exchange ideas like this, you really notice the very different level 7 within Europe regarding how women are perceived and supported in these professions. I also think it's a very German issue, to be honest, especially when it comes to women, when it comes to diversity and these topics in general, not just but particularly regarding women. So during the pandemic, we saw, and I don't know, you have children yourself. I don't know how it was for you, but in my own circle of friends, I noticed again that when it came to the question during the pandemic of who would stay at home, it was usually the same pattern. In most cases, it ended up being the woman again. I think we also saw a bit of a dip after the pandemic, but fortunately, things are now returning to normal. So you really do see more women, again, who have returned to teams from part-time positions where they may have had to go during the pandemic. In other countries, or even within Europe, if you look a bit towards Eastern or Southern Europe, it's not really an issue at all. There, the question of whether a woman returns to work after parental leave or not, like in France, doesn't even come up. That's just how it is. And I think in Germany, we sometimes have a bit of a unique culture in that regard, at least when it comes to women anyway.
Absolutely. But you brought up an important topic, and that's also something that gives me hope, namely the talents and potential that already exist, especially among younger women. You also mentioned mentoring as a topic, but also, as I already brought up, the idea that maybe you just go into business for yourself with what you do. And I've noticed both on various platforms and at all kinds of events that there's an incredible sense of solidarity. I don't know how you see it, but especially when women feel addressed here, or even men who say, hey, I want to start my own business, I could use some help. I've rarely seen an area where you get so much support.
Well, I think the community as a whole really sticks together. If you look around a bit, by now we have various signal groups where people can exchange ideas, where you can quickly connect and share information. But overall, I also think, and this contributes to it as well, that companies are more open to talking to each other. That has changed a bit. I remember that 10 or 15 years ago, exchanging information about threat scenarios or possible attacks with other companies was always like, whoa, we can't really do that. And nowadays, you see a lot of communities, some of them a bit closed, operating under Chatham House rules, but where there is much more exchange happening overall between companies in this area or among the subject matter experts. And from my point of view, what is absolutely essential is that we continue to hold these events in person. The ISACA chapter, for example, is nationwide in Germany. If we wanted to do something for the entire chapter, we would have to do it virtually. That's why we rely on these regional ambassadors. Personally, I've always felt that once you've spoken to someone in person, you approach them very differently afterwards, especially when it comes to mentoring. Well, it's not always just, you can't always act only as a mentor. I think you always have to be in both roles somehow. I've also had a mentor myself for many years. And even if it's not so formal, I think everyone has their own mentors or role models they look up to a bit in their environment. Maybe if it's not so formal, also for different topics that you keep developing that further, for example, that you also meet in person for mentoring. If you only do mentoring over Teams, I think you don't really connect with the other person as much as you would if you, say, go out for dinner together in the evening and have a bit of an exchange.
Maybe another important topic. We've already talked about that a little bit before. Which skills do you see, especially in women who are able to contribute confidently?
One very important skill from my personal experience, people always say that women are super emotional. Personally, I think that when things really get serious, women are usually not emotional at all, but actually very rational, very structured, as you already mentioned. They often stay calm and often somehow keep a better overview. I think that's a really important point that women can contribute well. So this calmness and structure in such teams, and also not everyone, but maybe this somewhat more civilized way of interacting, that you really function together in an empathetic way. Otherwise, it's always a bit difficult to say what women bring and what men bring. I think what you generally need to bring if you want to work in such a community is openness. And above all, the openness to see things differently sometimes and not always stubbornly insist on your own entrenched opinion. That's not easy. I think none of us can claim to be completely free of that. I also have topics sometimes where I think, no, we're going to do it this way now. And afterwards, you sometimes think, maybe we should have done it differently after all. But I think that's extremely important overall, especially in the field of cybersecurity, to stay open, to be willing to change perspectives. My favorite saying for years has been, when I'm working in cybersecurity, I need a bit of a criminal mindset. I have to engage with technology in some way. This isn't a 9-to-5 job. For me, it's more like a 24/7 job, you know.
Cybersecurity in general is a lifelong mission for me. And I think that's true for a lot of people, not just women, but also men who work in cybersecurity. It's a lifelong mission. It's a passion. It's a calling. And you can really see that a lot is being done that goes beyond the usual boundaries. But what I'd personally like to know is, where do you see the whole topic of female empowerment in 5 years? Do you think we'll see a major milestone? Or do you think we'll just keep coasting along as we are now? And let's say, just for example, perhaps that the really big milestone still won't have changed.
That's a good question. Personally, I would, of course, hope that in 5 years we won't have to talk about this topic so explicitly anymore, but that it will have become a completely normal part of everyday life. I'm a bit afraid that while we'll probably make really good progress in some areas, in others we won't. Personally, I think a lot also depends on how the global political situation develops, how much German or European companies orient themselves toward other major nations. And of course, in general, not just politically, but also in terms of how conflict situations might evolve. So I can definitely imagine that this topic, in case of doubt, might be pushed a bit to the sidelines again, or could even gain more importance.
And now the last question, what is your personal empowerment goal? What do you personally wish for, something that should apply to you or to other people as well?
So what I personally wish for is that women simply no longer have to think about whether they can do something or not. And, you know, can I go there now just because there are only men, but that it just becomes completely normal. I am who I am. I think as a woman, you shouldn't very often not care so much about what others say, and just follow your own path, or in this case, her path. It's also important to me that we find even more, many more women who lead the way as role models and inspire the younger ones. Or rather, I'm not even sure if we always have to inspire the younger generation, or if maybe it's actually the younger generation now inspiring us. That's also something I noticed, that as we've already discussed, the younger generation sometimes handles things very differently. So I can actually imagine that maybe the opposite will happen, that the younger generation will end up inspiring the older generation a bit. Unfortunately, that happens very rarely, but maybe that's something that could reinforce this hope and help make it a reality.
Thank you, Julia, for the open exchange. I really enjoyed talking about this. And you just mentioned role models or inspirations. For everyone who now thinks, hey, I'm interested, I'll include the link to the relevant ISACA initiative. Of course, I'll also include the link to your profile. I know that you're always open to exchanging ideas and that people can reach out to you if they ever need help. You mentioned it as well. There are dozens of ways to connect and exchange ideas. And personally, I would really hope that in 5 years, we won't even need to talk about this anymore, that it will be completely normal for me to do a podcast with a woman or with a man, that no one sees any differences anymore, and that we just have a natural sense of equality. But I agree with you. I also think that depending on how the political situation or the general situation in the world develops, this change will either happen faster or not as quickly. But I believe the best thing we can do is to change our own mindset, or rather to train our mindset to the point where we no longer need to talk about such topics. That's what I would personally wish for, and that hopefully in 5 years we won't have to do exactly the same podcast again.
That would be really cool, of course. Thank you very much, Nico, for the conversation. At this point, as I said, feel free to reach out to me. Maybe not necessarily for the Shehad Izeka initiative, but we can also talk about which initiative might be a good fit for you. There are so many initiatives out there, and we are not the silver bullet for everything. But since I'm also in frequent contact with other initiatives and I believe have a pretty large network, just feel free to reach out to me directly, even for speaking engagements. We have events which you can find on our website. You don't have to be an Izeka member to attend the events. We're happy about everyone who joins us and supports us in advancing this topic. Thank you.
Thank you too. That's it for this episode of Cybersecurity Chefsache, and we'll hear and see each other next time. See you then.